Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and the musicians are lining up like jets on a runway here in the studio. The pop duo Tegan and Sara first, and then American guitarist Glenn Jones later on the show. In between, we'll talk about some surprising musical collaborations that'll give us a chance to sample the new Elvis Costello collaboration with The Roots, and we'll look back at some other collaborations that worked, and at least one that didn't. We're also continuing to collect stories from our guests and listeners about albums or songs that they missed first time around, but which they later came to love. We're saving a lot of them for tomorrow's show, which will essentially be a crowdsourced playlist of songs from this Missed It Then, Love It Now project. But here's one I wanted to play for you now.
Hi, my name is Chris. The album that I missed was The Queen Is Dead by The Smiths. It came out my freshman year in college, and everybody I knew was so into that record. I could not stand the sound of Morrissey's voice. He just seemed like a big complainer to me, and I didn't quite understand what everyone was seeing in it. But now that I'm older, I think I understand the poetry of Morrissey's lyrics, but also the sort of irony in his voice. Now it's one of my favorite records, hands down, and I play it for my daughters all the time, and they love it. We are alive. Oh, has the world changed
or have I changed? Oh, has the world changed or have I changed? Now that's two people who've told us about coming late to The Smiths, the British band led by the quirky singer Morrissey. Because yesterday, Tegan Quinn from the band Tegan and Sara told us that she too didn't really get The Smiths when they first came out, though her story was a bit different. She'd heard a local Canadian band that was trying to sound like The Smiths first. So when she actually heard The Smiths, and it was the same album, The Queen Is Dead, that our listener Chris was just talking about, she was like, hey, these guys are trying to sound just like Red Autumn Fall or whatever the band's name was. Anyway, Tegan and Sara didn't come here to New York to talk about music they missed first time around. They came to play and to talk about their new album. So 2013 has been a good year for Tegan and Sara Quinn, the identical twin sisters who lead the band Tegan and Sara. Their seventh studio album, called Heartthrob, premiered at number 3 on the Billboard 200 chart, and they've been shortlisted for the Polaris Music Prize in the duo's native Canada. Tegan and Sara are going to start us off on Soundcheck with a live version of their song, I Was a Fool.
City's walls. Do you remember me as the vow? How I pray for your cause. I stood still, it's what I did. Love like ours has never fixed. Well, I stuck around. Well, I did behave. I sued you every time. I was a fool for love. Then you blame me and block me out. How long did you think I'd last? then you disappear for weeks to pout. How many times could I pass?
I Was a Fool from Tegan and Sarah. You'll find it on their new album, Heartthrob. That was a live performance here in the Soundcheck studio. Tegan Quinn singing and playing a neat little, and I do mean little, acoustic
very
guitar.
Very little, yeah.
Sarah Quinn singing and actually playing a very small keyboard as well. John Spence at our big old grand piano. Ted Gowans playing electric guitar. We were talking before going on the air today about power ballads, and do you guys see that song as a power ballad?
Yeah, this version of it is perhaps maybe not quite so power ballady, but on the record it's definitely, you know, opens with that piano, and when I wrote the song, I just recorded acoustic guitar and that piano part, basically, that was pretty much it, and then left an empty sort of 8 bars in the middle. Sarah wrote the bridge, and I was kind of... We were leaning more towards more electronic and kind of like sort of synth-sounding songs, more upbeat. So I didn't even know that that song would get picked, but Greg Kirsten, who ended up producing the bulk of our new record, Heartthrob, it was one of his favorites right off the bat. So when we got into the studio, I was clear that I hoped that it didn't remain acoustic and simple like that. I wanted it to really kind of cross over. I'd imagined it for some like big pop star, like a Rihanna or something, really like, you know, kind of making it a dramatic, intense song or whatever. And we threw out the reference of Roxette, actually. And before we knew it, he was, you know, kind of creating this incredible sort of track around this song that started out as just like a sort of simple acoustic song. So now it's a power ballad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, a couple of things I want to follow up on there. One was Tegan. You said you wrote the song at first, and then Sarah, you wrote the bridge. So this kind of collaborative songwriting, this is still a relatively new process for the two of you, right?
I mean, I think that we've started to sort of branch out a little bit more into our own music. I mean, we've certainly collaborated in the past, especially when we're working with other artists. You know, we've done top line writing for other artists and electronic music collaborations, like with Tiësto and David Guetta,
right,
and that sort of thing. But yeah, with our own music, I think that we sort of have been... I've been more protective over our independent songwriting status, and I think that we always saw it as being like one of the kind of neat hooks of our band was that we didn't do a lot of collaborating and that there was this sort of cohesion that had to happen in the studio. So, but with this record and even on previous albums, I think that we've been a little bit more inclusive and we'll like let each other into the songwriting process a little earlier than we have before. And Tegan was especially generous and let me write a lot on her songs for this record, actually.
Well, now you've gone to the other question I wanted to follow up on, which is the idea that the two of you also write for other people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How different is the songwriting process when you know that its first intent is not for the two of you, but for someone else?
I think there's a little less stress initially when you start writing for someone else because you are working within the template and the boundaries that they are setting by the music that they're creating initially. So oftentimes when we collaborate, a track is sent to us first and, you know, like the track will get re-recorded or added to or adjusted or rearranged throughout the process. But when you first get their idea, it's their idea. So I feel like I feel less stress when I begin a song with someone
else. Which is so
funny
because I feel like it's the opposite.
Entirely
opposite for me. Like when Tegan and I are writing for our own music or our own albums, I generally feel very little stress because I think to myself, well, you know, we'll just write until we get all the material we need. Whereas when somebody sends us a track, I'm like, I'm almost immediately aware of the chance of failure. And, like,
well, and I want to be clear that, I mean, I feel intense pressure when I'm writing with someone else because I do want them to like it and I want them to choose what I've created. But I guess when I mean stress, when I sit down just to start, like the other day I had a day off and for the first time in forever I was like, I'm going to bring my guitar upstairs and I'm going to set up my Logic stuff and I'm going to actually like record. Mm-hmm. And I was just sitting there with this guitar in my hands being like, I could go anywhere, any direction, any type of song. I could write about anything I want. And sometimes that's where the stress comes from, is just this sort of incredible, like, I mean, this infinite amount of options right. that are in front of me. Whereas if you sent me a track tomorrow, you've already given me limit. You've already limited me to a certain type of song. So I just, it's good. It's a good exercise, I think, for an artist. I encourage young artists out there to collaborate with each other all the time. Bands constantly come to us for advice, young artists, aspiring artists, singers, writers, etc. And I always say now, like, the best thing you can do is go and collaborate with someone else because you are broadening your horizon right away. Instantly, you are learning from someone else. And I think that that's the best way to become a good writer.
Well, and you know, you look at the example of Lennon and McCartney, this great songwriting partnership where, you know, you had two very different, you know, you can always tell a John song from a Paul song.
Yeah.
Except for when you can't.
Right, right.
So what they did for each other was really what made the Beatles,
yeah.
you know, so incredible. So how is it, you know, this time around with Heartthrob, you know, writing in a more collaborative way? Do you find you're sort of tempering each other?
Well, it's our most successful record, so maybe we were mistaken all these years that we were holding out. Maybe we should have written together sooner.
There's something sort of like creatively frustrating for me, that in the compromise, we've ended up having so much more success. You know, you, of course, stubbornly think that it'll be your song or it'll be your vision that ultimately pushes you forward. And I think that over the years, I've realized that that was fairly, like, that's not true. Mm-hmm. Tegan and I, probably our most successful moments have come when we were probably both stubbornly moving towards the middle, you know. And that sort of compromise has created some of our strongest work, probably.
We're speaking with Tegan and Sarah. The new album out is called Heartthrob. Sarah, you used the word compromise twice there. That's, you know, some people see that as a dirty word. Did you have to kind of make your peace with the idea of compromise?
Well, this is the funny thing. Like, I think Tegan and I, what makes us really strong leaders and what makes us really successful business people in our world is that I think we are really collaborative and we love to work with other people. And we, you know, we have longstanding relationships with people in our team, from managers to our, you know, creative people, musicians. Ted Gowans, who's playing with us right now, 10 years, you know, we've been with him. So I think that that's actually one of our strongest, characteristics, that we can work well with other people, and yet we have had a very difficult time working with each other, like, you know, in that way. And so it's interesting because I do feel that there is this sort of sacred ground for me in our career where I do get to do this one thing alone, one thing that I get to go into, like, a space by myself and work on music, and I don't have to listen to Tegan or ask for her advice or her feedback. And yet here we are now, like Tegan said, having our most sort of successful time in our career, and it probably came from maybe letting our guard down a little bit with each other.
So this wasn't an accident, Tegan. It was the idea you set out to kind of make inroads into the pop world.
Absolutely. I mean, when we sat down to work on Heartthrob, you know, it was like a year of our life, and the first, like, you know, dozen songs that came out were actually songs that I wrote, and it wasn't that they weren't good, but I think that, you know, we were definitely not 100% sure of which direction to go in, and it was a few really amazing sort of fateful meetings that we had with some new people who were running our record company that really inspired Sarah and I to actually sit down and write a list of what we actually really wanted to achieve. You know, when we signed our record deal, we were 19 years old. We'd started playing music right out of high school, almost to fill time because we didn't know what we wanted to do with our lives. We didn't want to go to university. And we jokingly have filled 14 years full of stories about how we just don't know what we're going to do next. People are always like, you know, is this what you wanted to do when you were kids? And we really didn't want to do this when we were kids, and we really didn't through our 20s necessarily say, this is our path, this is what we're supposed to do, you know, this is where we're going, and here's what we want to accomplish. And at 32 years old, we were pushed by our record company to say, like, what do you want to be? Do you want to be an indie band? Do you want to be a cult band? Do you want to make folk records? Do you want to just write for other people? Like, where are you going? Like, they were new to the whole fold, and they were actually just asking us those questions. I'm sure they were asking everyone those questions. They just wanted to know what kind of band we thought we were. And out came spilling these tales of, like, all this hard work that we had put into our career and these struggles we had endured and, you know, fighting for equality for women and on pop radio and, like, how many years we had struggled opening for big rock bands and seeing bands that we didn't think were necessarily as deserving, like, just achieving success. And all of a sudden I was like, why are we holding ourselves back? Like, why are we limiting ourselves? And as we started to put together this list of things that we wanted to accomplish, it became very obvious that even musically we had been holding ourselves back too. It wasn't just on the business side. And that musically we really did feel like we could be a bigger band. And we had been told over and over again songs like Back in Your Head and Alligator and a lot of our record, The Con, actually, people were like, if it had just, you know, been pushed a little bit further, you know, those would have been potentially radio-friendly songs. And we'd always just said, no, there's no room for us on radio. We're different. We're girls. We write our own songs. Nobody wants that. No one wants that. And all of a sudden, we didn't care anymore. We were like shrugged off all that insecurity. And I was like, I want to change the way that mainstream radio looks. I want to change the way that mainstream music looks. I want to get things like SNL. I want to get on the Ellen show. I want to tour and play really big venues. And I don't want to compromise. I want to just go for it. And still have integrity in our music. And Sarah was on board for that too. She was really pushing for a pop record anyway. So it was kind of, you know.
Well, it's not a pop record if it doesn't have a single.
Right.
And you guys certainly have a single with Closer. Mm-hmm. You wanna play that for
Absolutely.
Us next?
Yeah, sure.
Speaking with Tegan and Sarah Quinn, the band Tegan and Sarah, playing for us here today in the Soundcheck studio. This song is the single, Closer.
Open, the wind is really blowing. Night sky is changing overhead. It's time to just stop physical. And the time to get all so critical. So let's make things physical. I won't treat you like you're all so typical. I won't treat you like you're all so typical. Underneath me, here comes the heat before we meet. A little bit closer, here comes the spark before the dark. Come a little closer. The lights are off and the sun is finally setting. Night sky is changing overhead. It's not just stop physical. I'm a tough dude. So critical, so let's make things physical. I won't treat you like you're all so typical. I want you close, I want you. I won't treat you like you're typical. I want you close, I want you. I won't treat you like you're typical. So let's make things
Tegan and Sarah with Closer. That is the single from their current album, Heartthrob. Tegan and Sarah and the band playing for us live here in the Soundcheck studio. Why don't we move on to another song? They'll give us a version of I'm Not Your Hero. Once again, it's Tegan and Sarah live on Soundcheck.
One, two, three, four.
Standing where I am now, standing up at all. I was used to feeling like I was never gonna see myself at the finish line. Hanging on to parts of me, hanging on at all. I was used to seeing no future in my sight. Sometimes it feels like they wanna remind me, send all those feelings after me. I'm not their hero, but that doesn't mean that I wasn't brave. I never walked the party line, doesn't mean that I was never afraid. I'm not your hero, but that doesn't mean we're not one in the same. Like I am now, lighting up the hall. I was used to standing in the shadow of a damaged heart. Learning all I know now, losing all I did. I never used to feel like I'd be standing so far ahead. Sometimes it feels what I recovered you lost, sending your peaceful arms to me. I'm not their hero, but that doesn't mean that I wasn't brave. I never walked the party line, doesn't mean that I was never afraid. I'm not your hero, but that doesn't mean we're not one in the same. Sometimes it feels like the side that I'm on plays the toughest hand, holds the longest stand. Sometimes it feels like I'm all that they've got. It's so hard to know I'm not what they want. Sometimes it feels like the side that I'm on plays the toughest hand, holds the longest stand. Sometimes it feels like I'm all that they've got. It's so hard to know.
Tegan and Sarah, live on Soundcheck with I'm Not Your Hero. Once again, Tegan Quinn singing and playing that little guitar, Sarah Quinn singing, playing a bit of keyboard, and Ted Gowans on guitar, John Spence playing piano and more keyboards. Tegan, Sarah, you guys have obviously a wide global fan base, and currently your fans are threatening to break the internet. Rachel, listening in from the UK, writes, "Come to Newcastle, England," all in caps, "you guys rock."
Thank you.
Gracia from Mexico wants to know when you're coming to Mexico. Claudia from Poland wants to know when you're coming to Poland. Timothy from Lansing, Michigan wants to know when you're coming to Poland as well. No, I'm kidding. He wants you to come to Lansing, Michigan. I'm going to give the last word to yet another listener who wrote in, but we're going to withhold this person's name. Listening in from work. One earphone in, the other ear paying attention to students taking a practice SAT test. Can't resist listening to Tegan and Sarah live.
Aww.
Now, you guys just finished a European tour, right?
We did, yes.
Lots of people have had that chance, and now touring on your own and with fun.
Yeah, we're with fun. Well, we do New York the next couple nights, and we're on our own for a couple weeks, and then we meet up again with fun at Red Rocks, and we're excited in the middle of August, and we will get back to Europe, to all of our European listeners here. We are planning to come back probably a few times on this record, and lots of touring planned. We'll be touring till next summer, I think, so.
All righty. That gap year has turned into a gap decade and a half for Tegan and Sarah. Tegan, Sarah, thank you so much for coming in. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you very much.
When I think of you, I think of your skin. Golden brown from the sun. Your arms outstretched, your hair cut shorter than it's been. But still blowing in the wind. When I picture you, I think of your smile. And it drives me wild. Your life escaping.
Elvis Costello and The Roots just gave the music world a sneak peek at their collaborative album, which has raised some eyebrows. We'll hear a bit of it, and we'll look at some other unexpected collaborators. And later, more live music in our studio, this time from guitarist Glenn Jones. This is Soundcheck.
Allison, I know this world. Killing you, oh, Allison.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Elvis Costello is probably best known for hits like Watching the Detectives, Veronica, and this song, Allison. But earlier this week, when the English singer-songwriter announced his latest release, it was with an unexpected collaborator, the hip-hop group The Roots. Now, Costello's no stranger to collaborating. We've heard him working with the Brodsky String Quartet, Burt Bacharach, Paul McCartney, and many others. And The Roots work with a lot of people, too, especially in their role as house band for Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. That's apparently where they got the idea for their new record, through backstage jam sessions with Elvis Costello. Well, we've got the first song from the new album, and joining us to take a listen and to discuss a few other unlikely collaborations is Emily Rems, managing editor at Bust Magazine. Emily, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thanks.
And happy anniversary. 20
Thank
years
you.
Of Bust Magazine.
20.
Let me play for you this song. It's called Walk Us Uptown from the forthcoming record by Elvis Costello and The Roots.
Will you walk us uptown? And wherever you go, you know we will follow. Will you walk us uptown? And we'll stand in the light of the new killing ground. And we will make a sound. Set to sing our sorrow. Will you walk us uptown while our tears run in torrents? We suffer in silence or pray for some solace? Will you wash away our sins in the crossfire and cross currents? Uncross your fingers and take out some insurance. No matter what the price, it's your own.
Walk Us Uptown from the forthcoming record, which will be called Wise Up Ghost, Elvis Costello, and The Roots. Emily, what do you think?
I like it.
A good collaboration is you hear the two. It's like it's not something plastered on top of something else.
Right.
And this I mean, you can hear that as an Elvis Costello song.
And it sounds so natural for both sides. I think they both come from, like, gritty urban backgrounds, and that's in their music, but they both, they're so polished, like, both sides as artists, that it really melds together so beautifully.
And if you just, like, listened to the singing and the kind of choppy guitar part, I mean, I mentioned watching The Detectives before, which has that kind of sort of reggae feel to it. It's in there too, but then you have all that production from the Roots layered on top of it. All right, so that is, you know, kind of a surprising collaboration, even for two artists who have done a lot of different things in their careers. But Emily, why we asked you here was to tell us about some other surprising collaborations. What's been a recent one that really was unexpected for you?
I felt like I did a double take when I found out this year, back in May, that Snoop Lion, formerly known as Snoop Dogg, had paired up with Miley Cyrus for the song Ashtrays and Heartbreaks, this song about, you know, like dead friends and stuff. And I wasn't quite sure what Miley would contribute to that track, but I actually really liked it.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was catchy.
So this is a surprising collaboration, but one that worked.
I thought so, yeah.
All right, this is Miley Cyrus and Snoop Lion, formerly Snoop Dogg.
Tonight there's gonna be a whole lot of smoke in the air. Blow it hard for the ones who ain't here. Seems like every day we're putting 1 6 feet underground. So blessed, what goes up must come down.
Now my buzz is gone, I need to reorient reality. Can't let them see me.
Oh, Emily, our little girl is growing up.
I know, she's filling up ashtrays.
Miley Cyrus with the artist formerly known as Snoop Dogg, now Snoop Lion. Ashtrays and Heartbreaks is from the album Reincarnated, which came out earlier this year, along with the movie about how Snoop Dogg went to Jamaica and became Snoop Lion. So, I mean, you know, Miley Cyrus really is sort of trying to make that next step, you know, into sort of an adult artist, as
right,
opposed
she's
to
doing the Disney jump.
Yeah. So, a surprising collaboration, but one that worked. Now, give us one that shouldn't have worked, but did.
I chose Candy by Iggy Pop with Kate Pearson on it from his 1990 album. Yeah, Kate Pearson's from the B-52s. Super pops, super southern.
Right.
Iggy Pop, you know, is like the Pope of punk. And 1990, his album Brick by Brick had this song on it, and it became his only top 40 hit ever. And he's been in Bust Magazine a couple times over the last 20 years, and he's always said, like, oh, I hate love songs. I can't do love songs. But the one time he did, it was solid gold.
Let's hear Iggy Pop with Kate Pearson and Candy.
Candy, 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 I can't let you go. All my life, you're haunting me, I love you so. Candy, 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 I can't let you go. Life is crazy.
As Emily Rems told us, that was Iggy Pop's only top 40 hit in a very long and productive career, and it came when he collaborated with Kate Pearson of the B-52s back in 1990 on the album Brick by Brick and the song called Candy. Emily is managing editor at Bust Magazine, talking about surprising collaborations. That one, in her opinion, shouldn't have worked, but did. I mean, it sounds like even Iggy wouldn't have expected much from that.
Right, right.
There are many collaborations that, you know, should work but don't?
Mm-hmm.
What about one that shouldn't have worked and didn't?
I would have to say that Lou Reed and Metallica combining forces on Lulu was the worst ever.
Ever?
Probably. I mean, I think it's unlistenable.
So is this really one that shouldn't have worked? I mean, on paper, Lou Reed, Metallica, I mean, they both have a history of writing kind of edgy, aggressive songs. I mean,
I know that they were trying to be avant-garde, and I don't want to say, like, don't try to be avant-garde,
right.
You know when you're riffing on, like, two German plays and you're trying to make, like, a super heavy concept album that you're really asking a lot from your audience, I think.
And from yourself and your collaborators,
right,
apparently.
Right, right. Well, yeah, apparently, I don't know if you heard that interview where Lars Ulrich said that Lou Reed challenged him to a street fight while they were making this album. Like, I don't think they were even happy with it themselves.
Well, let's hear The View from the album Lulu. Let's say it was critically mixed,
yes,
when it came out. From Lou Reed and Metallica, an example of a collaboration that shouldn't have worked and didn't.
We worship someone who actively despises you. For worship, someone who actively despises you. I am the root. I am the progress. I'm the aggressor. I am the tablet. These 10 stories. Worship. Worship. Pain and evil have their place sitting here beside me. I offer them to you as servants of the gold that you must give. Pain and evil have their place sitting here beside me, and I offer them. I offer them.
Lou Reed and Metallica collaborating on their rather controversial album called Lulu, and a song called The View. Emily Rems, not impressed, managing editor at Bust Magazine, talking about unexpected collaborations, and that one shouldn't have worked, and lo and behold, did not, in her opinion, an opinion shared by many of the critics, I guess I have to say.
Right, yeah.
So September 17th, we get a chance to hear the full-on record from Elvis Costello and the Roots. We've only heard the one song so far. It is an unexpected collaboration. Do you hold out a lot of hope for this one?
I do. I think it's going to be great. There's a real beatnik quality to it so far that I really enjoy, and I can't wait to hear more.
All right. Emily Rems, Bust Magazine, 20th anniversary. Happy anniversary. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
This is Soundcheck.
Some said that you could live with feast on your flesh and drink down your blood. Wear your heart down that flag and dishonor that vow, cause we must not change its color.
Up next, guitarist Glenn Jones performs songs from an instrumental ode to New Jersey. The album's called My Garden State. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Guitarist Glenn Jones plays in a style sometimes called American Primitive. It's a problematic name. Yes, the style is specifically American, a mix of folk, early pop, the blues, but it can also be quite sophisticated. Glenn Jones's songs involve alternate tunings and often evoke specific places. What places, you ask? Well, his latest album is called My Garden State, and the first song he's going to play for us today is called Across the Tappan Zee. So, all signs point to New Jersey. For this song, Glenn Jones is playing the banjo, and Laura Baird joins him also on banjo here in the Soundcheck studio. Thank you. That is called Across the Tappan Zee. Glenn Jones playing the banjo, Laura Baird helping out with banjo as well. Live here in the Soundcheck studio, that is a song that appears on Glenn's latest record called My Garden State. Glenn Jones, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks very much.
So for folks who are listening in stereo, the dozens who still do that, everybody's listening on crappy computer speakers now, but for folks who are on headphones or some kind of good stereo speakers, you were in the right channel, Laura in the left channel, just so people know who to blame for what.
Blame me.
Now, this was not the first time that we've heard you as a banjo player, although, you know, we know you primarily as a guitarist. What attracted you to the banjo?
Oh, well, I mean, I've always loved the sound of the instrument. I guess around the same time that I got into, like, pre-war blues recordings in 78s of hillbilly music and gospel music and stuff, I became exposed to, like, old-timey banjo playing Appalachian style. And I've just loved that sort of clawhammer style. Laura is a very good player in that style.
What about you?
What's that?
Do you play in that style?
No, I don't. It's
you're just a guitarist picking at a different set of strings.
Exactly. But I don't know. I mean, there's so many different ways of playing the banjo that I figure mine is no worse than any other, I suppose.
Right, right. Well, now, the album is called My Garden State. Very New Jersey-centric record. Actually, Laura recorded it in addition to playing on that track. How much of an impact does place have on your music? I mean, your last album was recorded near some train tracks outside of Boston, and if you listened carefully, you could hear the occasional commuter train go by. Mm. You know, how much of New Jersey is in this record?
Well, that's a good question and really hard to answer. I guess the real question is how much of New Jersey is in the boy, you know? So I don't know how much place there really is in the music. I mean, really, the songs are just the most recent songs I've written since the last album. But
but it's not called The Garden State.
Right.
It's called My Garden State.
Right. What the songs have in common is that they were all written over approximately a two-year period during which I was living back at our family house looking after my mom. So I don't know, certainly, you know, going past a lot of the old places that I used to hang out when I was a teenager. And
It's got to be kind of not melancholy maybe, but bittersweet. You know, it's the way nostalgia can
definitely
often be.
And in terms of what we were there for, it was bittersweet. It was essentially to kind of ready my mom's house to put it on the market and be sold. So my family had lived there since 1966. So a lot of history is in those walls. So I don't know, but I'm not really a nostalgist necessarily. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm constantly thinking about what I'm working on now or I'm about to do and projects that are in the future. I don't really look back that much. But in that environment, it's not possible to not look back some. You know,
right. So the album's called My Garden State, the latest from guitarist and composer Glenn Jones. You play an instrumental style of music. Do you feel like you're telling stories, depicting specific places in these songs?
I like to think that that's what I'm doing. You know, it was when I was living in New Jersey in the early 70s that I first discovered the music of John Fahey, who is probably the biggest influence. I don't know probably about it. He's the biggest influence on my own style of playing. And
late American guitarist who really, I mean, we say American primitive, that term really derived from his playing.
Very much so, yeah. And prior to listening to John, I was listening to, you know, the rock groups and that my generation were listening to, the Doors and Jimi Hendrix and all that stuff. And it was really the discovery of John's music that made me realize that you didn't have to have a lot of guitars and amps and drums and a bunch of other people, and you didn't have to write lyrics and you didn't have to sing, that one person with an instrument could tell stories, and John was expert at doing it. I mean, you just kind of got sucked into this world that he kind of invented, and trying to tell a narrative or some kind of narrative with an instrument. You know, John was not a super virtuoso player, but his music wasn't about virtuosity. It was about mood and emotion and all that stuff.
Glenn Jones talking about the late John Fahey. I want to ask you about a big John Fahey-related project in a little while, but first going to ask you to play another song. And you've got the guitar in hand for this one. Let's hear Going Back to East Montgomery. It's Glenn Jones playing live here in the Soundcheck studio. The album's called My Garden State, and here's Glenn Jones. Glenn Jones, live on Soundcheck with Going Back to East Montgomery, a track that appears on his latest record called My Garden State. He's playing for us here in the studio today. Glenn mentioned John Fahey before, the late American guitarist who often worked in different types of open tunings. You spent over a decade working on a box set of Fahey's material.
That's correct.
And that is now out.
Yeah, it's been out, I guess, about a year now.
Called?
Your Past Comes Back to Haunt You.
Good title.
Yeah.
Now, is this something that would serve as an introduction to someone who's just learning about Fahey, or is this something for the completists?
I'd say it's more for the completist. I mean, there's a lot on there that could very well serve for an introduction, but it's a big bite to chew, and I really think it's for someone that's already kind of discovered and become fascinated with Fahey's material and wants to learn more about where he came from and how he kind of developed as a player himself.
Well, now Fahey's been gone. It's been 12 years.
Yes.
It's a long time. So there's like a generation of music lovers out there who maybe don't know who John Fahey was and why he was important.
I discover that on the road all the time. You know, people come up to me and it's like, well, if I was going to get a John Fahey record, which one do you think I should get?
That's exactly what I was going to ask you.
Yeah.
So what do you say?
Generally, there are two that I recommend people start off with. One is called Days Have Gone By. I think it's his sixth album on Tacoma, which I think is as perfect a solo guitar record as ever has ever been made. And the other one that I'm quite fond of is his second album for Vanguard, made in, I think, 1968, called The Yellow Princess.
Mm-hmm.
That's not only a collection of some really great compositions, but really beautifully recorded as well.
I would probably throw in the second of the Christmas with John Fahey records.
Interesting choice.
Yeah, just because, you know, it's like, A, Christmas tunes that you can actually listen to, mm-hmm. you know, and B, great performances.
Yeah.
So anyway, so Your Past Comes Back to Haunt You is this big box set of Fahey material that you've produced. It's out now. The latest record is called My Garden State. It's out as well. Glenn Jones, great pleasure having you with us on Soundcheck today.
Oh, thanks for inviting me back. I'm really glad to be here.
By the way, Glenn Jones played another song for us that we don't have time for right now, but which you can find on our website, soundcheck.org. All this week, our listeners and in-studio guests have been telling us about songs they missed first time around, but love now. Tune in tomorrow for a playlist based on what we've heard from the members of the band Franz Ferdinand, Tegan and Sarah, and of course, all of you. Our Missed It Then, Love It Now playlist tomorrow night. That does it for today. Soundcheck is a production of WNYC. Irene Trudell leads our engineering team with Paul Schneider, Bill O'Neill, and Jason Isaac. The show is produced by Greta Cohn and Katie Bishop with Alex Kappelman and our interns, Alex Martinez and Ian Petrarca. Our digital producer is Mike Katziff. Our executive producer is Joel Meyer. I'm John Schaefer. See you back here tomorrow at 9. This is Soundcheck.